Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. Writer Faith Saley is a familiar name to public radio listeners from her work on Wait, Wait and her own show, Fair Game with Faith Saley. But you will really get to know Faith by seeing her new one-woman show, Approval Junkie, at the Minetta Lane Theater. The show is an offshoot of Faith's book, Approval Junkie, My Heartfelt and Occasionally Inappropriate Quest to Please Just About Everyone and Ultimately Myself. The performance is that Faith Saley-esque blend of humor, casual outrageousness, and smart self-analysis audiences have come to appreciate. Although not all, her CBS Sunday Morning viewers aren't on board with everything, as we learn in the show. We also learn about how she worked through grief, disordered eating, the Los Angeles audition scene, and her own self-judgment. Approval Junkie runs through December 12th at the Minetta Lane Theater, and it almost didn't happen, as we learn in a new podcast she's hosting that just dropped called Broadway Revival, The Story of an Epic Comeback. Faith joins me now. Hi, Faith.
Allison, I'm so happy to see you. I'm so grateful you came to the show. And I've never heard anything described as Faith Saley-esque. And I'm so excited. I'm so chuffed, as the English would say.
You don't have to drop that, Juliana. That's not a word you have to drop. Chuffed. It's okay. Let's talk about the intersection, the podcast, for a minute, and then we'll talk about the show. So Approval Junkie was supposed to be on stage in New York, like a lot of things, in spring of 2020. And as we learned early in this podcast, someone on your crew was hanging out with Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson.
As one does. That's right. Our music and sound designer, Brandon Bush, was on tour with them, you know, just jets in to make the final rehearsals for our show. And we're all hugging and using hand sanitizer, right? We're going to be okay. We're putting packets of emergency in our water and using hand sanitizer. So we're fine. And so we like to say, with all due respect, that Rita Wilson and Tom Hanks shut down our show.
So this first episode of this podcast really looks at what happens when an entire industry dependent upon people gathering and having this experience together shuts down. Over the course of it's four episodes, right?
That's right.
What kind of stories will we hear?
In the first episode, it's quite retrospective. So we decided to follow my little one-woman off-Broadway show that was shut down. I mean, we were going into tech the day that Broadway and all theater was shut down. So March 12th, 2020. And we follow the return of Mrs. Doubtfire, a big, huge Broadway musical that had only had two previews by the time Broadway shut down. But within that kind of spectrum, we also talk about what William Shakespeare and his company did during the plague. We talk about how, you know, Broadway producer Kevin McCullum, who produces Mrs. Doubtfire and Six, talks about Broadway as an economic octopus, right? We can easily forget that Broadway is not just for the performers and the audience. There's a whole ecosystem of someone who devotes his life to making wigs, of the dry cleaner for all the Broadway shows, of the bars and restaurants around. And what it meant for all of those people, and especially the artists and writers and producers, to be told that what they do, what gives their life purpose, is non-essential. When at the same time, our whole country was kind of surviving the pandemic by sitting on sofas watching stories, right? Like, thank God for Netflix. And so we hear those stories. We hear what it takes to return to the stage. I interview Antoinette Nwandu, who wrote Passover, which was the first play to reopen on Broadway, and talk about how she returned to her play and utterly changed the ending. And there's also, what was really interesting was when we conceived the podcast, we didn't necessarily know that we would need to devote a whole episode to the unfolding racial reckoning in theater as well. You know, people who live in theater and like to go to theater think of it as this incredibly inclusive, progressive community. And I hardly need to tell folks there is racism everywhere, even in the theater. So we really delve into that as well. It's amazing when you think about Broadway coming back, how many different stories can be told under that umbrella.
My guest is Faith Saley. Her one-woman show is opening. It opens tonight, I believe.
I know.
Happy opening night.
Thank you.
When you wrote the book, you toured with the book. I watched some, it was interesting watching some book talks because you're acting out the book. I'm like, oh, this is how the one-woman show came about.
Ah.
What were some things that being on stage that really enhance the stories that you wanted to tell in your essays? You can write them down, but then when you bring them alive, what were some of the things that were enhanced?
The process of taking my book and turning it into stories that can resonate from the stage was so clarifying, Allison, because there was so much stripping away. Mm. I actually think this process of becoming a playwright will make me a better writer when I return to prose, books and essays, because it was kind of a lesson in shedding cleverness. Like you mentioned wait, Peter Sagal rolls his eyes every time I use a pun on the show. That is not a pun friendly crowd, and I can't help myself. But I love words. I'm a word nerd, and I love turns of phrase. And while that works in a book, that's not what people show up for a real live theater experience. They show up to, and I know this sounds very like what a therapist would say, but they show up to hear your truth, right? They show up, they don't show up for polysyllabic words. they show up for many emotions and vulnerability. And so I think the process of falling out of love with my own writing and finding out like what's underneath the stories, what is the resonance? What's the vulnerability? It makes it so much. I mean, I read the audiobook when my book came out, right? Mm-hmm. I read my words on a page, but this is so much different. It's so much more immediate. It's so much more intimate. And it feels like the stakes are higher.
You are delving into intimate parts of your life, your life story, your family's story. What is it like to go through that range of emotions every night?
It's a gratifying roller coaster, and the show is not completely chronologically set out, but it does begin with a prologue that's very modern, that's mm-hmm. current. But then I go back and tell, not to brag or anything, but tell the story of how I won my high school pageant, Miss Aphrodite, 1989. And it does sort of move through my professional struggles and struggles with body issues and, mm-hmm. and a challenging marriage, and ends up closer to where I am today. And it's funny because if I sit in my dressing room and try to sort of get myself in the mindset I need to be at the end of the show, which is so full of gratitude for where I am in my life now, it doesn't prep me for the journey as much as knowing, like, I'm going to sit on this stage, tell these people what's happening now, and trust the words and let the story kind of bring me along. And the best moments for me as a performer and storyteller are when I'm making eye contact with someone in the audience and am surprised by how full I feel of emotion returning to something that happened to me so mm-hmm. long ago.
I did not know you were from the South. That was the big revelation for me with you, is that you're from the South. What is something about growing up in the South that's still part of who you are?
Oh, y'all. I will never stop saying y'all. And I, my kids are born and bred New Yorkers, and they say y'all. And I'm very proud of that, because for me, it's actually like a really feminist progressive move, because I was doing some you guyses. My husband's a native New Yorker. He does you guys. And then I was like, you know what? You guys doesn't cover my daughter. I have a daughter and a son. So I really upped the y'all. And now my kids are the only kids in their cohorts who say it. But I feel, and we have an assistant director for our show, Ibi Owolabi, who came up from Atlanta to help with this iteration. And when she heard me say y'all in the show, she was like, I love that, because apparently the new slogan in Atlanta is all y'all means all. And I love the political underpinnings of that, because as you heard in my show, when I was growing up, Allison, in Atlanta in the 80s, the city's catchy slogan was Atlanta, the city too busy to hate. Which,
because we weren't before, but now we are.
Right. Right. Now we're too busy. Now, if things slow down, we may hate again, but let's just cross our fingers.
So, you know, as a young woman, you went on a challenging academic run. So you go from Northwestern to Harvard to Oxford. What is unique about academic approval junkies?
Oh, it's so empirical. There's just no arguing. If you get the 4.0, well, you also know you could get a 4.2, right? If you did the extra credit. You get the A or you get the A plus, and there's really no arguing with it. And that I found very satisfying, because the young me, I was raised very Catholic, and I just really got a lot out of following directions and raising expectations and meeting them. Mm-hmm. And then to go from empirical academic success, which of course also just came from privilege of, you know, I didn't have to have a job during college. I think about that a lot. Mm-hmm. when I pat myself on the back for being really good in college. I get to just show up and take classes. I didn't have to worry about student loans. So there's a lot of privilege there. But to move from that kind of achievement to Hollywood, where it is absolutely subjective and 100% personal, that was so hard.
Yeah, it's that idea of, you know, as much as it can be, there's a certain meritocracy in academia. Like, you do the work, you'll probably get a decent grade. But with right. LA, it could be that, you know, you don't have banks, as we learned in your show.
As we learned in my show. You know, at one point, EB, our assistant director, because as you know, Allison, bangs come back into the show when I received some unsolicited criticism from a CBS Sunday Morning fan. She's like, whoa, bangs are really the villain of this show.
so many discussions of bangs. And you know what? I approve that you don't have them.
I still don't have them. I am dying with this gigantic forehead. But you will appreciate this. When I get off the stage every night, my stage manager, Justin, has these little orange Post-its that are square, and he stamps them with the stamp that says approved, and we put them on my forehead so that they do resemble some really nice blunt cut bangs.
My guest is Faith Saley. Her show, Approval Junkie, is at the Minetta Lane Theater through December 12th. So which city is tougher for an approval junkie? Atlanta, where you grew up, where you first tested the show, LA, or New York?
Atlanta was a breeze. When I premiered the show in 2019 in my hometown, it was a gift. It was, I didn't have the prologue I have now. That is very much for a New York 2021 audience. And I used to step out on the stage and I would just say, I went to North Springs High School in Atlanta, Georgia, and don't you know that got applause right then and there. But it is funny to note how the laughs come in differently. Mm-hmm. Like I have a line in the show about being excited to appear on Bill O'Reilly's show on Fox News, and how I was gonna make him fall in love with me in front of a bunch of white people who like guns. And that used to get huge laughs in Atlanta, because they're like, that's us. And in New York, I think people are like, really? That was your goal?
It's a little burr. There's a little burr chili. The first time you said
it's like, ooh, that's right. I have always thought of LA and New York as boyfriends. And LA for me was the bad boyfriend whose approval I could never get. I could never be funny enough, pretty enough, mm-hmm. skinny enough, successful enough for LA. Young enough, by the way. Even though I was there in my 20s, I was still not young enough. And when I moved to New York, it was very Mary Tyler Moore. I mean, that's a very Gen X reference there, but and I know she was in Minneapolis, mm-hmm. but it was very much like, oh my gosh, this is my Beshert. This is the city who loves me and appreciates all that I have to offer and embraces this forehead of mine.
You know, we're laughing, but there's some really serious, incredibly intimate moments, really upsetting moments. You really take us through some of the difficult points in your life. Can you see the audience during that? Because there were women behind me going, oh no, oh, like they were sort of like, they were going with you on some of the moments, especially the issues around fertility.
Yeah. Thank you for telling me that. That fills me up so much. I can see when I am downstage and the spotlight is not so bright on me, I can only see the faces of people in the first two rows. And it's so, this experience, Allison, performing for people with masks on is so fascinating because I am telling these audiences, I'm telling the story to these audiences, right? I am not looking at someone else and acting with someone else on stage. Mm-hmm. And all they can give me is their eye contact. I don't know what their mouths are doing. And it is so meaningful to me to hear responses like that. Because you are right. This show has, I hope, lots of funny moments. It's frankly been advertised as lots of funny moments, right? People want to laugh right now, I think. Mm-hmm. And something that's really gratifying to me, my amazing director and collaborator and I, Amanda Watkins, talk about these whiplash moments when the audience doesn't know that something is coming, like talking about a miscarriage or two. Like talking about the profound grief surrounding my mother's death, like talking mm-hmm. about being anorexic. And it is those moments where I do not hear laughter or applause, but I can feel, you know, there's this palpable energy, which we've all missed with live theater exiting, that energy where you know people are listening. And there are times, like there's this story I tell about my son, which is probably my favorite thing I've ever written. And he does something so heartwarming. And I heard a woman in the audience the other night go, oh, and it just, it brought me all the emotion I wanted to have there in mm-hmm. telling that story about my son.
You know, you recount a few times in your life when you're seeking approval, you know, really had dire consequences for you, for your health, trying to be thin enough. I don't want to give something away. Someone else who you help get a spotlight, it can't really take it. It's really difficult for this person. Mm. Have you learned to manage this approval seeking so that you don't hurt yourself or bring others into it?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm not the world's most evolved person, but I think I can safely say, yeah. I mean, that's what I love about this play is that it's really a journey. It's not a cautionary tale. And I speak to my daughter at the end, who's mm-hmm. now 7. She was 4, 3 and a half when I wrote the play the first time. So I've updated it to speak to a 7 and a half year old girl. But I say I don't regret seeking approval because it has built me in many ways, but I have learned, and really, really the hard way, I have learned what not to pay attention to, especially in this world of social media where anyone can opine about everything about me, not just my forehead, but the sound of my voice and my thoughts. And I also think, and I wonder if you share this point of view as well, becoming a mother is so clarifying. Mm-hmm. Like there's just no time for the noise. If you want to be the kind of professional you are, the kind of artist you want to be, and the kind of parent you want to be, I don't have the time to wade through everybody else's stories about me, especially because I now happily mostly devote my life to helping other people tell their stories. And so that helps me not have the focus on me. And I can shift my point of view to spotlighting other people. And that was like this massive turn in my life that feels so, so fulfilling.
Well, I always say about social media, like you can say what you want about me. I don't have to read it or listen to it. There's this thing called the block or mute. You can keep saying it. I don't have to listen to it.
It's like a beautiful spiritual button, isn't it? Block.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah. I'm not stopping you from saying it. I'm just taking care of myself.
I cannot imagine anyone assailing Allison Stewart. I cannot.
My favorite TV thing one, and then I got to wrap, is somebody, I like to wear my hair up, but I have really big ears. And someone said, your ears look like two flapjacks on forks. I actually thought that was funny. I thought that was witty. By the way, people are tweeting that they really like your puns. Our listeners really like your puns.
God bless you. These are my people. And by the way, your ears and my forehead, let's get them together. We'll go out and have some herbal tea.
Just sit all night going block, block, block. Faye Salie's show is called Approval Junkie. It opens tonight and runs through December 12th at the Minetta Lane Theater. The new podcast is Broadway Revival, the story of an epic comeback. Faye, thank you so much for making time at opening night. Have a break a leg.
Oh my gosh. Thank you, Allison. Thank you so much.